Well, Kevin, I appreciate you for taking the time once again to talk to us. I mean, you just spoke to Tom the other day and we tuned in for that and the discussion was so good. We're like, we got to get Kevin Ross back in here
Yeah.
again.
For sure, man.
I
This is
mean, he
my honor.
like the fourth member of the crew at this point.
Yep.
Come on, man. Listen, man. Save your boy a seat for sure.
For sure. So, of course, Kevin, we got to get started here. You know, it's going to be a discussion about R&B, but about your music as well. So just, you know, just stay tuned. We're going to have a lot to talk about. But of course, we got to talk about new music first. And, you know, there's a lot of great songs that came out in the last couple of weeks. Silk Sonic, Cam has a great remix that Troy did. But we got to start off with your single, Looking for Love.
Looking for Love.
Talk about the single.
Yeah.
Man, Looking for Love. It's just a great vibe, man. Like a contemporary love story that, you know, I felt like our generation is kind of like 10 years repressed because of social media, in the sense that we got so many different options that's out there that it makes it hard for anyone to kind of like stick it through with anybody. So like for me, I played the character within the song where it was like, I'm ready to actually settle down. But the woman is, you know, still out there, not even necessarily trying to find love, but just exploring options, you know. So at the end of the day, it's like, all right, well, cool. Like, I'll be here, but don't waste my time either. So, you know, it's like just kind of establishing that space and that, you know, that kind of definitive line and say, you know, this is the song where, you know, we really teetered the line of either you a sucker, you know what I mean, or you somebody that, you know what I mean, just kind of like, you know, you kind of like respectfully saying, all right, cool, like I understand what you're doing because I was there, but you know what I mean, like, you know, we'll keep in touch, you know what I mean, like, you know, but you ain't gonna be curving me, you know what I'm saying, every other night, you know what I'm saying. So you know, it's just that, you know, so it's the, you know, it's that cool balance too. So honestly, man, like it's doing what it's supposed to do, in the sense of like we took it to the R&B radio last week. We scored number one most added, you know, and it's just, yeah, man, like just for being R&B song, me being an indie artist, like Apple Music showed love, in a sense that like the streaming numbers in the first week were like really, really good. Pandora's numbers were really, really good. So I really appreciated some of the DSPs for really like, you know, stepping up and chiming in, because it really made a big difference, you know, with the trajectory of the song. So it's looking really, really good and very promising.
Nice.
Well, Kevin, let me jump in real quick, ask you a question, because you hit on something that I preach all the time on this podcast. Y'all about to be mad because I'm going there again. We see so much in this generation of music where we don't really hear love songs. Your shirt says love is dope. And you kind of hit on a little bit earlier about how like the advent of social media, maybe it's like there's so many options. We don't get that in the music. Why don't you think we hear like the classic songs that we just heard on Verses when my boy Keith and Bobby Brown were doing their thing, and we heard that quote unquote begging music? Ain't nothing wrong with begging for love, y'all. But why do you think that we're missing that from R&B right now?
I think that right now we don't have an excuse, right? But like years before, the powers that be just kind of, you know, and the powers that were coming up, like the A&Rs and stuff like that, were just telling us that shit ain't cool, right? Mm-hmm. And the women that they were dealing with were telling them that that's not what they want to hear. So when you have a small microcosm of people that are kind of tastemakers to say what's cool and what's not cool, then you're going, the music is going to become a reflection of that, right? So for a lot of the artists, they feel like they had to adapt, right? Yeah. So hence why I think that R&B just kind of got a little wear and tear to it, you know what I mean? Like, maybe, I want to say, like maybe like 10 years ago, we kind of got a lot of like wear and tear, in a sense of everything just got redundant. You know, we found a little formula that kind of worked, and everybody was more so focused on being cool than actually being honest or transparent and, you know, trying to like get to that bottom dollar. And you know, and as a result, you know, we had to take a back seat in the sense of like to hip hop, to country, to everything, and really kind of like fall back so that we can reshape who we are. So, you know, the ladies actually stepped up first and like made us look a whole lot better. Yeah. And you know, so we attribute a lot of the you know, of the small resurgence that's happening to, you know, the women of R&B who are actually being a lot more transparent and honest than what we did, you know, in the last 10 years. So.
Right. Ed, I'll tell you what, though, about vulnerability. What Kevin has is what, it reminds me of, like, what Joe had, what Jagged Edge had. Like, you can listen to them as a guy, and it doesn't feel like, you know, you're allowed to feel vulnerable when you listen to their music. Like, when I listen to, like, a Jagged or a Joe. Ed, what is the key to that?
The key is just being real and honest, man. Yeah. Like, love is a very complex subject. And I can just say that when you hear music from, I've compared some of Kevin's stuff to Joe's stuff in previous reviews, and that's a compliment because it's very authentic.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we've been hearing from my end from R&B for the past 10 years, see, Kevin said it, so y'all can't call me a hater, so we're on the same page with this.
Yeah.
But when the influx of hip-hop came, and it was just so much machismo and like just like, positioning and like, you know, you got to put up this front, and we lost that vulnerability, that honesty about what love really is.
Yeah,
that's what the game's been missing. So I love to see artists like Kevin and the women who were kind of doing that as well that he mentioned, bringing that back into vogue, because it's just being real and honest. Like, that's why I love my R&B, because honesty about the relationships we go into, bring some honesty back in the game, y'all. That's what I'm saying.
For sure.
Yeah. I want to bring up a couple of other records here. Kevin, I don't know if you've had a chance to check these out yet, but I think it'll make for an interesting discussion just for your, because you're a producer as well, you're a songwriter. I'm curious to get into your mind in terms of just the sounds that you're working on, like the Silk Sonic record that came out. Ed, I know you really like this song. One of the complaints I've gotten from Tom, who's not on here today, is that it sounds too much like a record from the 80s, which it does, but how do you kind of, Ed, I'll start with you. What do you like about that record? Because I think Tom does make some valid points there.
Tom being Tom. We love Tom, but Tom being Tom. That's why we got Kevin on. He's replacing Tom today.
Yep.
But I love the song because I think there's a difference, y'all, between kind of a homage and just like stale. And to me, this is a song that harkens back to like the skating rinks that I grew up when I was like super young. It's like a younger skating rink, upbeat, fun track. And that's a good homage. That's the difference than just a copy and paste. Oh, we've heard this before. Oh, this is stale and musty and or whatever. So that's why I think that it works. Do I love it as much as their first single? Not quite. But I think it sets a good groundwork and shows that whatever album, whenever we get it, they got some heat on the way, y'all.
I mean, I agree. I think that if anything, it just shows, you know, the level of musicality within R&B and pop music that, you know, that's been missing. So I don't really get into whether I like the song or whether I think it's a smash or a hit or whatever, because I think at this current point in time with Bruno and Anderson, that the masses are going to dictate what they want and what they like. And so right now, everyone is on the wave of Leave the Door Open. So everyone's excited about receiving the new music. Everyone's anticipating to say, what are they coming out with? So then this is an up-tempo. So they're going to devour it, whether we liked it or not, right? We just got to be grateful that what they are devouring actually has substance to it. They have a level of musicality so that these young kids, when they start playing on the piano or on the guitar, they're gonna have to learn some different chords, right? Yeah. So this actually expands the mind of the masses on a musical level, right? So like I said, it's being, you know, I like Leave the Door Open vastly better, you know what I'm saying, than this. But at the same time, I understand, like, this is, you know, the whole Silk Sonic conception is for the greater good of music. Yep. You know,
agreed.
It's joining forces to say, how can we bring R&B soul to the masses? How can we give them a history lesson on what this sound, you know what I mean? Like, it's a whole thing. Like, and even watching Bruno and Anderson, like, do interviews, like, they're very, very, like, knowledgeable about, like, where they're getting these sounds from and who's attached to this and the songs that they listen to. So when these kids are, they study and they're like, all right, cool, let me look up Ohio Players. Let me look up such and such and such, you know what I mean? Let me look up Bootsy Collins, right? So this is a lot bigger than just a song, more so than it is a moment, a movement, and just a position that they're trying to set for everyone else that may possibly come in with not a similar sound, but people will be more accepting.
Right.
They'll be more receptive to, you know, the next kind of vibe that may come from another artist. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, I like it.
Yeah.
For the greater good.
You know,
I love it. Yes. Teach the babies the chords, man. Put the trap machine, put the trap jones in the closet. Let's teach the babies the chords. Great point.
No, it's crazy because when I listen to that record and even Kevin's new record, just to hear the changes in the melody and how it transitions into the bridge, like that was something we were so used to before. But when I listen to it now, it's so foreign and it reminds me like, man, like this used to actually be a regular thing in music. So it's just crazy how it's all gone away.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, man. It's like, how have we gotten so far away from it that now when there's the resurgence, it feels new. But that's how long it's been since we've actually experienced something like that on a grand scale.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, it's been what, like 10, 15 years since I felt like this on a song or something like that. So, you know, to the masses, you know, 15 years, a long time for you to, you know, to feel something, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, like big ups to Silk Sonic, man.
Yeah.
Just the whole movement. So
exactly. Ed, I want to pass it on to this song. This is a remix that Troy Taylor, who Kevin Ross works with extensively, did this Chem record with Wiz Khalifa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the complaints that we always have, Kevin, is like the usage of samples on songs that sound familiar, and you know, it almost feels like it's too soon for those samples, and you know, that sample has been used many times. But Ed, what works about this one? Like, Troy seems to be the type of guy, he understands samples will be used, but he always adds his flavor to it, and it works on this record.
It does. And let me kind of preface this by saying, when I heard about this remix, your boy was skeptical, because that song, the original, is my favorite from that Chem album. It was one of my favorite songs last year.
Yeah.
And I like Wiz, but Wiz and Chem sounded like a motor oil and peanut butter sandwich. Like, I don't know how this is going to work. But it worked because of that flip of the sample. And I think that was able to do it. And I know we're at a generation now where we're kind of like, oh, it's too soon. Player, 1998 is when Big Pun had that joint. That was a long time ago. We're talking like 20 years. So even though it seems relatively new to us, we old. Our parents said the same thing when Puff was flipping sandals in 97. So we're of that generation. I'm cool with a sample as long as it's not a copy paste. And this was not a copy paste. It took a familiar song, flipped a very good song, gave it a nice little cookout vibe. Yeah. I love it. I thought it worked very well.
Kevin.
I think you hit it right on the head. I think you hit it right on the head with cookout song for sure. I think that Troy is very masterful at pinpointing the audience that he wants to reach.
Right.
And so, I think for all parties involved, like you said, the combination worked well.
Yeah.
But I know that he made that record for a particular audience. Yeah. And so that audience is now going to resonate with that to say, okay, I like this. It's got a little nice little groove to it. And it reminds me of the sample that I've heard before from my former formative years. so, you know, he he targets a particular audience, and Troy's always been like that as far as just like well thought out in a sense of how he was going to execute a record. Yeah. And so, you know, this is the result of it. I think that I'm interested to see like actually what it does. You know what I mean? As far as and how it helps like research the record, because Lie to Me, I feel like it's been a minute since Lie to Me came out, so the remix felt kind of a long time away. But you know, I think that, you know, it serves a purpose for that particular audience for sure.
Right. I'm gonna bring up a couple more records here, and I want to ask you this, Kevin. So like BJ the Chicago Kid dropped an EP, Adrian Marcel, like these are all your peers. You guys all, you know, came up in the industry together. I think BJ just transitioned into going independent recently, and you've been down that road. Give me that time frame after, you know, you left the majors and you go independent. Like, what's the hardest part about that?
Okay, so the funny thing is, me and BJ, we were in the studio right in the midst of me leaving. So he invites me to his studio spot. He's like, yo, let's work. So I'm like, yeah. So, you know, I'm telling him, I'm like, so, you know, I'm definitely leaving Motown, right? So, you know, I'm like in the process of like working it out. It's been like 6-7 months, like in the process of leaving. And he's like, and he tells me, he's like, shoot, I'm with you, right? I'm with you on that. The only thing was is that I just kind of beat him to the punch, right? Mm. So of course the powers of B are just like, we can't let BJ go. Kevin's going, we can't have both of them go. Because now that takes away validity, and that takes away, you know what I mean? Like our stake in saying that we are a legitimate musical label, right? So you can't not have BJ the Chicago Kid, right? So he did what he had to do. He did his due diligence. And I'm so proud to see BJ independent. I understand it's a different game. You know what I'm saying? Like, and back to your point as far as your question, I think one of the hardest parts about being independent is the shift of powers and you taking the power back that you have delegated to everybody else. So now that power that you delegated to the A&R, you have to relinquish that from them. Relinquish that from, you know, those people to then redelegate or to find it within yourself to, you know, like actually compartmentalize what you're trying to do as far as within the indie business. I think the biggest thing is finding out what's going to be your big money maker. Because when you're coming from a major label, you don't really know what you make to the penny, right? So that becomes a problem. So you don't know what avenues that you really do extremely well in, because you can say, oh yeah, well, you know, streaming, they got me, but you don't know what the label may gift them, or, you know what I mean? To say, hey, you know, so you may not receive that love when you hit that corner, when you hit that turn. Right. You may end up on different little playlists than what you are accustomed to, right? So you have to prepare for that curve, but to say, number one, what's going to keep my lights on, right? Mm-hmm. What's the avenue that's going to do that? It's going to be DSP. Is it going to be terrestrial radio? Is it going to be TV? Is it going to be, you know, continuing to do features? What is it going to be that's going to make my business profitable? That's our bottom line. Like, when you're indie, like, there's no more, oh, you're going to feel a vibe. Yeah, it's a vibe. Yeah, whatever. it's like, that's cool. But at the end of the day, like, you got to have that business mind too to say, okay, what's going to make me this money? I want to make great music, but I want to make music that people are going to listen to, that people are going to consume, and that people are going to champion in one of these goddamn avenues. There's too many avenues for everybody to just be like, it's whatever, right? So I think that's going to kind of be the hardest turn, is figuring out the business structure and what's the avenues that are going to make the most money or make him extremely profitable and successful, you know, to what his expectations are. So, but you know, he's got it. So, you know what I mean? I'm super proud of BJ, super proud of Adrian. Adrian's been, you know, doing indie for quite some time now, longer than me, yeah. You know, longer than me, longer than, you know, some other people too. So, you know, he's not new to this.
No.
So, you know, he's gathered himself as well. Man, I mean, even from his last album, that record called Nowhere was like crazy to me. I was like, what the hell? You know, but all that to say is that, like, you know, you live and you learn from the records that you put out, live and you learn from the releases that you're making. And every single time that we come out as an independent artist, we're trying to either up our game or do better and find a better strategy in order to, you know, really permeate the genre.
Right. Ed, as I'm listening to Kevin Ross, he has a plan. I thought the plan, and maybe you're right here, but I thought the plan, Ed, was just to upload a song on TikTok, hope it blows up, and then figure out the plan after. Isn't that what everyone does now, Ed?
Little plan. The way my feed looks like, that's what it is. You get a TikTok hit, and then you blow up for 15 seconds, and you trend on Twitter for a half a day, and all of a sudden, you're a classic legend. That's what Twitter told me. But I love to hear that my man, Kevin, he has a game plan, and we need more of that. Because if you're jumping in this independent arena, this independent ocean, so to speak, you got to have a life raft. My man got a plan going. Love to hear it.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I think audacity taught me a lot.
Yeah.
But audacity taught me to be profitable. That, I could say, was a blessing. Mm-hmm. Nothing but a blessing, for sure, because I knew, you know, you read all these books and you listen and, you know, people already say that the first 2 or 3 years of, you know, building up your business or the artist, you know, those are going to be the years where you're not making any money, you know? And so the only thing I asked and that I prayed was that, you know, that whatever that was spent, that I would either break even or be profitable. God did that. He's like, I'll make you profitable, but it's not going to be in the way that you think. It's not going to be in the avenues that you probably wanted it to be, but I mean, he made it so, and he made it with the music. So now I have a bar. I have a bar that I can start off to say, you know, if I don't make this amount of money, then we didn't hit the mark. And so now I have to readjust. But yeah, so I'm really blessed to be one of those indie artists that to come out the gate to be profitable even in the midst of a pandemic. So yeah, I mean, you gotta have a game plan. You gotta have it. And even when the game plan don't work, like I was just talking about it last week, talking about God is a genius. I knew what that record was.
Yeah.
Right. But when I put it out, everybody was, you know, like the world was up in arms. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, race riots. Not race riots, but race protests. You know what I mean? Like, so nobody wanted to hear the fact that it was like, God is a genius and everything happens for a reason. Look, guys, there's no coincidence in anything. They're like, get the fuck out of here, man. We also black, militant. That's why when, you know, what's his face? Why am I forgetting his name now? The one that did black, and my skin so black. What's his name? Dang. I forget his name now. But all I have to say is, like, those kind of records then kind of came to the forefront. Yeah. So I didn't have anything at that moment to combat it, but I knew, I was like, yo, I got to give God as a genius some time. And I got to keep moving because I knew that I was putting out Audacity Volume 2. So I'm like, things will cool down. Things, you know, we'll get into that. And sure enough, like, I put God as a genius out in May. It didn't really click in a lane until September.
Right.
Like something like that. So that's a while. Like that's a minute. Like if people see that a record don't work in a week, they like, all right, cool, let's just go on to the next record, whatever. Right. So exactly. But for me, if I have a plan to say, I know that this record will work in a avenue, right?
Right.
I'm gonna take it through that avenue. Shout out to BJ Stone over at Heart and Soul. If I take it into an avenue, that works, like, people are going to receive that. Yeah. But it's going to take a minute. And it took months. You know what I mean? But when it clicked over on satellite, they took me number one, and it stayed there for a long time, for months on end, right? So I think any indie artist, if you know, you know. And you know what that avenue does. So that's all I say about that. But, you know, patience and, like, every, you know, to each his own. You know, maybe some people's, you know, whole purpose is to make TikTok songs or whatever. And I ain't mad at that. Like, if it brings you an ROI, that's great. And that's awesome. But as for me, I can't put all my eggs into a basket like that. That's so fleeting. Yeah. I got to make sure that, like, I can potentially really reach across different avenues and see who's, you know, what's going to be profitable, what's going to be, you know, the winning ticket for me for that record.
Right. Kevin, Ed,
Kyle, before we get going, I want to jump on two things that Kevin said real quick, because he really hit us with some gems.
Yep.
Two things that I remember back last year when Audacity Volume 2 dropped. And I thought of this, and I talked about this, and he hit upon it, and that's something that's very important. I don't want folks to miss it. Number one, we have gotten to this place when it comes to music, and that there's a wave, and that everybody has to follow that wave, and then whatever the wave is, we got to do. I like that God is a Genius presented a different sound, a different message than what we were saying. It's different, but kind of similar. If you listen to it, it was just presented in a different way.
Yeah.
And to Kevin's point, where it's like everybody was on this other wave, I'm going like this, there's still an audience for it. So even though that audience might not be as loud, might not be wilding on Twitter, might not be sharing as hard, there is still an audience. And that was proved with patience and dedication that we saw later on in the year when the song kind of took off later on.
Yeah.
Because everybody's wilding on one thing in the summertime, but when the fall came down and some other folks, you know, cooler heads prevail, and we're able to receive the message he was giving us, that reached a different audience. So again, it's something that I harp on a lot. If you're passionate about a message in your music, push it, and there is somebody out there who will resonate with it, even if it's not the fly-by-night, like, Twitter crowd. Like, it's gonna happen. Yeah. So props to my boy for kind of sticking with a very solid record and making it there, because there was an audience for that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna get into this article that Ed actually put together. The title was called "Is Modern R&B a Victim of Ageism?" And this applies, of course, to your generation, Kevin, because you're in the midst of that. But before we get into that, let me ask you this, because Long Song Away, that was a number one hit at Urban AC. And how old were you at that point, Kevin? You were probably late 20s, early 30s?
I was 26, 27.
Yeah, 26 or 27 year old. And this is when Urban AC wasn't even cool. Yeah. So, so how did you know to embrace that crowd? Did you embrace it right away? Because I remember during that time, nobody wanted to be an Urban AC artist.
Right. Isn't that interesting that nobody wanted to be in Urban AC, and then shortly after, we'll get to that. But anyway, all that to say that and all the record labels wanted to just get a, well, the number one. Okay. Anyway, we're going to get back to that.
We're going to get to
that. And I'm going to share the energy.
Talk that talk.
Very clear. I had waited so long on the major label.
Yeah.
I got signed when I was 22, 23. Yeah. So at that time, it had been 3 to 4 years of just writing songs, doing X, Y, and Z, even writing hits for other people.
Yeah.
And then still not getting the opening until they said we hit a crossroad. And literally the conversation went like this. Kev, so here's the thing. So, you know, radio people are saying that they want to go a Long Song Away, but we think that you should not.
Hmm.
Go and do Long Song Away because, you know, Urban AC is going to put you into a box. I think that we should just continue to, you know, work on records and this, this, and that. Now, granted, you're talking to somebody that has put in 3 to 4 years of trying to get it right, right?
Yeah.
No. Nope. I'm gonna work myself out of that box. I'm good. Let's go with Long Song Away. If they saying that they're going to do something with Long Song Away, it's whatever, right? I'm not even thinking of how God is setting it up to be like, hey, dummy, you wrote and produced this record. No. I'm setting you up to be the 100%er guy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't care. Like, I'm in this space where I'm like, I felt like I was never going to come out, right? In the sense of having a debut album or anything, it just wasn't looking good for me. I was like, even though my writing is going well and I'm receiving, you know what I mean, like money from that, my life is changing in that way. But artistry wise, now I feel super independent. I dropped Prototype years, within those years. I dropped Goddamn, you know what I mean? Like I had records, right? That I was actually just putting on SoundCloud to just release energy into the world because I was just so tired of just having all this music and records just pent up that I couldn't put out, right? So all that to say, I knew that it was going to be the gateway, right? So I knew, okay, I grew up with older artists. I grew up having to be technically competitive with them. You know what I mean? Like being the young kid on the scene or you doing a musical or something like that. And, you know, some old people may not have no respect for you because they don't know what the hell you're doing on the stage. So I knew how to poise myself and position myself in that world where it made sense, right? So I didn't want to really tell my age because I didn't want for them to not take me serious, right? I'm 26 years old and this and that. They're like, this nigga don't know shit about nothing. Out of here. You know what I'm saying? Love song away. They call it all kind of stuff. And slowly but surely, it's just building and it's shooting up. Chicago took it and made a dance to it. And it's just building and building. And the next thing you know, because remember, during that time frame, so I came in urban AC. Yeah. Ro James came in mainstream urban. So by the time that he hit number one with Permission, which I mean was like a crazy record. Right? Yeah. Once he hit number one urban, RCA backtracked and said, all right, cool. We're gonna get this urban AC money too, right?
Yeah.
It's because that was the game plan for most R&B artists is go urban, then we go back and then we backtrack to urban AC.
Yeah.
Which for me, it was like, we're gonna go urban AC first, and then that's gonna bleed into urban eventually, right? Because during that time, you know, urban AC and urban stations shared the same space.
Yeah.
So once they see me walk into the building and they're like, who are you here for? Oh yeah, I'm here for such and such and such. Why are you interviewing them? Because I have this song. And then they hear the song and they're like, okay, like that's you, right? So then once they find a commonality to say that the people that's working urban, mainstream urban are my age, right? So they like, we gonna show love, you cool dude. We gonna throw it on the mix show and certain stations pick it up. So when I hit number one, as far as the urban AC, we still hit top 15 in urban mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. That's just how that worked. But then all of a sudden, because like y'all saying, it wasn't cool. It was not cool. My team didn't think it was cool. Label didn't think it was cool. Everybody was looking at me crazy. Like, look at Kevin Ross going urban AC. Now he's just aging himself in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that once I hit number one, then everybody kind of figured to say, I mean, a number one is a number one.
Yeah.
And we not, you know, doing what, you know, when that's, you know, whatever we're doing in urban mainstream ain't clicking, right? Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden you start to see the face change on it. So then all of a sudden I go number one, then Ro goes number one, then Daniel Caesar goes number one. Yeah. Then her goes number one. Then Khalid goes number one. Then, you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, you see new faces hit number one in a way that you've never seen before. So now, the landscape of adult, now it's not urban AC no more.
Right.
It's adult R&B. Now they're trying to take adult completely out of it because major labels are now saying, We gotta put our artists within the system because they're not gonna survive in urban, not unless it has this bona fide sound to it or feature from it.
Yeah.
And most companies, one, they ain't got that kind of budget for R&B artists. They sign in maybe two or three acts at best in R&B, and their plans is not to put a whole bunch of money into that shit. So to them, they like, all right, you trying to get Lil Baby on, you know what I'm saying? Goddamn, Looking for Love ain't happening, right? Yep. So we're going to take your ass through this avenue of adult R&B so that then we can cheerlead to the PR, to the publicity, to the masses to say, we're number one, right? Because when you hold up that number one, nobody really asks where you're number one, right, or how you got number one. What really matters is, we're number one, we're number one. You scream that, you scream it to the top of your lungs. And you smack anybody that says, but where did you get the number one? It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? We're number one. And that opens the door to Soul Train to be, you know, to a wider audience that you may not have had, right? So you're starting to see that. You're even starting to see Jasmine Sullivan is now taking her right to the throne of being the, like, I mean, I don't know, the queen of something. We haven't found the name yet, but she is the queen of something.
Yeah.
And now she's taking heat. Like, people are actually in a space where, remember, these are the same people. Mm-hmm. Let's be very, very clear about this. I'm going to say a name, and I love this person. Really do. These are the same people that liked Keisha Cole.
Yep.
That like Jasmine Sullivan. Now, what I'm saying about this is this. So, because not to get messy, right? There is a difference in style.
Yep.
There is a difference within the sound of that music, right? We got older, right? Mm-hmm. We got more mature. So our taste changed. That's like if we flipped it to kind of, you know, let's say our white counterparts, right? Back in the day when everyone was growing up, they loved Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And then when they got older, the taste changed to Christina Aguilera, right? Mm-hmm. Because now we want to hear singing. We want to hear some singing. Yeah. Now you spelling this shit out with the A. You want to hear singing now? Okay, that's what's up. Okay, that's what's up. Now y'all want to hear some singing. Okay, cool. Because when Jasmine was on the scene, people loved the songs.
Yeah.
They liked Bust Your Windows Out Your Car. They didn't necessarily understand the riffs and the runs and the dynamics of how amazing Jasmine was. Because some of the girls that I was singing with during that time would say, I like the song, but she's just too loud. I like the song, but she be doing too much. Yep. Right, because they didn't compute. They were used to the Keisha approach, and Keisha gonna give you straight down the middle. Just you know what I'm saying. So for somebody who's riffing and running and, like, I mean, precise jazz, Jasmine been cold, right?
Yeah.
It took them a while to say, my taste has changed now. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you in college, you used to doing ramen noodles and McDonald's. You know what I'm saying? But when you had your first taste of Kobe. You know, Kobe steak, you know what I'm saying? Goddamn, you know, filet mignon or sea bass, whatever, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to go back to no goddamn McDonald's, right? So now you have matured in that way. But all that to say is, it's really great to see the tides changing.
Yeah.
And to see how it kind of started, because I was kind of there for that shift and how it happened, in the sense of watching the tides change and watching the faces change of adult R&B, and now even seeing how it's continuing to evolve for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed. And it's cool, Ed, to see that people are actually calling themselves R&B artists again. I know people were running away from that for a while.
Y'all were making up the weirdest. I am R&B noir. I am. It's like, to say what it is, y'all. Stop. If you're an R&B artist, cool. Celebrate that. Like, we love it. Celebrate it. Stop pretending.
Ed, let's get to your article here. Is modern R&B a victim of ageism? What's going on in this article?
Yeah, so this was a cool piece. Shout out to I had basically on solinstereo.com, you know, go check that out right now, solinstereo.com. I had a round table of members of our Soul and Stereo Cypher on Facebook. You can check us out on Facebook there. And it was my girl Nicolette, who always big supporter of the podcast. Diane, our boy Kyle, George Littlejohn, Ryle Alexander, who is an artist. I had four folks come together and just talk about their experience with R&B, their love of R&B, folks from the industry, artists, and just fans. And we hit with some questions, kind of like what we do here on the podcast. So I'm going to hit y'all with a couple questions. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'll hit you with a few questions and just let me know your honest responses. And we talked about whether R&B is a victim of ageism, where we can go from now. So anyway, question one. We constantly hear there is no more good R&B, but there are so many established artists who are still dropping great albums. Why don't you think they get the attention they deserve? And do you think there is ageism in R&B? I'll start with you, Kev.
I think the reason why people say that there's no good R&B is because when you reach a certain age, you don't want to look for it.
Yeah. Yep.
No one wants to look for it. Like, you don't want to scour the goddamn crates. You don't have time, right? So if it's not in front of your face, if it ain't on the cover of Spotify or whatever, you're not going to go to the, let me look at the 15th to the 30th song on a playlist to see this weird name or this name that I don't know and give it a shot, right? Because at this point, people got jobs, people developing families. They don't have time, right? So I don't even blame it on the fact that there's no good R&B. It's just the fact that, you know, we have to do better as R&B artists, especially if we're independent. And even if you're on a major, you have to press. You have to press your publicity. You have to press marketing. You have to put money into that to make yourself visible. Get yourself in front of these DSPs to figure out, you know, okay, who has what slot? How can we make something work of this Pandora? How can [S2] Right. [S1] We make something work of this Apple? How can we make something like help me help you? If you need for me to do, you know, an event or whatever, like, you have to render yourself to these companies in order for you to exchange that for visibility. Visibility is the biggest thing within our genre that we're missing. We can't just throw out a good song and think that people really think like this, especially writers and producers for some reason think it's a good song. All we got to do is just put it out and let it fly. And that's not how that goes. That's not how the business runs, right? So you don't put out a song like that. So marketing and publicity, visibility, that's something that we got to take responsibility for. And then also, the other side of that question is, do we think that ageism is affecting R&B? I think that what's happening is the older vets within R&B still want to feel young.
Yeah, of course.
So let's take accountability, because there's still some people, and I say some, because it's not a lot. Like, let's not front here. There's not a lot of vets and legends in the game that are putting out good solid R&B music, because they still want to be young. They still want to. Yeah, I want to be in a club. Nigga, what club? Like, have you been to the club in 10 years? What kind of club? What kind of club are you trying? Yes. What kind of club song are you? Like, I'm sorry. Like, what kind of club song are you making? You dig what I'm saying? So let's be real here. Like, people are having a hard time stepping into that space to say, I've been out for a minute. I may be a legacy artist. I may be an artist that now has to transition into another space, into another world. When you start seeing, you know, when they got you on certain shows where it's like, remember right? Yeah. That's hard for an artist to compute, because you're like, shit, I got so much more in me. I'm still trying to do this music. I got a fan base. All I got to do is just reach you know what I mean? The younger kids, this and that. How can we figure this out? Blah, 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 blah. Versus just saying, you know what? It'll happen when it happens. And that's great. It's always great to have one record on your album like that, where you're trying to veer over into that lane.
Yeah.
One record. Don't let that record be your single neither. Don't let that record be the representation of it, so that when we do catch it, if it is visible, that's the thing that we hear. So we automatically gonna think you reaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's not coming across. That's why it ain't doing what it's supposed to do, because now you've eliminated certain avenues. You can't even do urban AC because they don't rock with it. You can't do urban because they think you old and it's not cool, right? Because how we gonna put you alongside Lil Baby and Lil TJ? You know what I mean? Like, how we gonna put you alongside them? Like, we gotta put you on the urban lineup for festivals. You don't serve that crowd. So now you're automatically alienating yourself with the music that you create, thinking that you're cool, and it's not. And you can't be mad. I don't think it's ageism. I think that it's more so a lack of, they don't have a sense of reality as artists. And, you know, whoever feels the way, you know, you know it's directed towards you. Right. And just do better. I'll give a perfect example. When Trey Songz came out, and when he hit with Ready, that was a problem.
Yep.
I mean, every R&B artist had a goddamn tattoo on their chest, tatted everywhere. They had the low cut Caesars. Niggas got in the gym. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody wanted to be the archetype of Trey Songz, because one thing that Trey had was the women.
Yeah.
Trey had the women even before it clicked. That's one thing I always noticed about Trey, was he had a solid fan base and he had some girls there. He always had it. Right. And so when he actually had the songs to go with it, out of here, right? It was just like, you know. And so then, with that being said, then everybody says, here's the new R. Kelly. This is when, you know, R. Kelly was still, you know, that was a name that we could speak of, but I'm not afraid of that. It's like it's like saying Voldemort. And
yes,
right. But so let's say R. Kelly could have combated that to say, you know what, I could do the same music because they got this from me.
Yeah,
this my shit. You know what I'm saying? He could have easily just been competitive in that route. But the smartest thing R. Kelly did was something that Trey Songz couldn't do during that time. And he dropped Love Letter.
And
when he dropped Love Letter, and he had When a Woman Loves, and you seen the video of him singing and just, I mean, he was singing. And he brought, Trey Songz brought something out of R. Kelly that he separated himself in such a brilliant way.
Yeah.
That I was like, this is it. This is the archetype. This is the way that when you were the hot artist and somebody actually comes in to take your slot, this is how you do it. You don't run the same race as them. You literally go into a lane to say, yes, that's cool, but you can't do this. And that's what R. Kelly did with Love Letter, giving us classics. You know what I mean? Like, to this day, Love Letter is a classic in a sense of, like, in his catalog, it really stamped the time where he became, for a certain moment, just imagine if he kept going. He would have been, you know, he was the king of urban mainstream. He was becoming the king of adult R&B just with his sound, because he was that level of genius to go that route.
Right.
And I think that that's just a great example for artists that may have a little time on them, that may have a little age on them, to study, to look at, to say, you don't gotta make something that feels old and doo-wop-ish, right? But look at the climate, look at the format, and understand how can you affect the format and how can the format benefit you from being there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Versus just trying to do something you think is cool, and you're gonna play it for your little nephews and be like, y'all rock with it. Of course they're gonna rock with it. They're your nephew. They're not gonna say that it's trash.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the problem. I don't think it's, I really don't think it's ageism. I don't think it's ageism. I think that the artists that are older, some of them just don't have they don't transition well. Yeah. And they make it look bad. They don't make it look appealing. Yeah. How about that? Right. They don't make it look sexy. They don't make it look cool. So we have that misstep. You know what I mean? Like, I can't blame that on ageism.
Yeah.
I blame it on the fact that they don't know their audience.
Well,
you know, my bad.
Well, Kevin, I'll bring this up because you mentioned Trey and Ed. Like, we loved Trey's last album because he figured it out. He had to transition into that urban, or I guess it's called adult R&B now. He figured that out. The only two issues I had with that, one was that I think Trey was like half foot in, half foot out on that transition, which is fine because it takes people some time to figure that out. But I think the other part of it is that the attention spans just aren't what they used to be. So for someone like Trey who puts out the album, I don't know how much you have to work that album for people to really get it, because the day one fans of Trey songs are obviously going to listen to it when it comes out. But how do you continue to push it to where it reaches, you know, a bigger crowd? Because Ed, you know, there's a huge crowd of R&B fans from the 90s, from the 2000s that still want that type of music. But like Kevin mentioned, they're not going to go out looking for it. You got to find a way to present it to them. So there's a lot of challenges there.
It's a whole different game. And I mean, my man, Kevin, we're going to have him on every week because he was just hitting on everything on that last rant. I was loving it. But yeah, Kyle, to your point, you know, I'm a reviewer, so I'm looking at pure quality and not necessarily production. And as far as quality, that album we got from Trey was his best in years because it was a transition. It was, to kind of piggyback off of what Kevin was saying, it was aging gracefully almost because he was entering this different space, but it still felt like a Trey record. I always go back to my man Luther in 2001 when he transitioned and he did Take You Out. It's like a different sound. It sounded current, but he won't doing songs with Cash Money, y'all. He won't like running around completely out of his game because he made sure that he was reaching his audience. Yeah. That's the trick. The unfortunate part, though, to your point, Kyle, is it's a different game when it comes to promotion. So the day ones, they're going to listen to it regardless. But kind of pushing that album, especially last year and the year before when stuff was weird, that's always going to be a challenge. So yep, that's kind of the space that we're in. But Kyle, to your point, what do you think about this ageism thing? Is it prevalent? Is that what holding us back in some ways?
I mean, old people are always, or young people are always going to listen to their generation of music. That's just how it is. Like when I was growing up, and that was when like Neo and Chris Brown, Trey Songz, and when they came out, and Omarion, that was what I was listening to. Was I listening to a lot of Keith Sweat or Bobby Brown? Maybe not so much. I was aware of it, but you're always going to rock with your own generation of music. And I think that's true, but there's also a point of, like Kevin mentioned, these new artists, you know, or these older artists, they have to find a better way to, number one, make better music, but to, number two, you know, push it in a way that it does capture my attention without, you know, watering down the quality. But I did read something interesting, though. I don't remember the exact percentage, but on DSPs, like 77%, I think the number was, of streamers only listen to catalog music. They don't even bother looking into new music, which I found to be super hilarious. But there's a lot of components here, Ed. I don't know if ageism is the main reason why things are the way that they are right now. I would honestly blame it on just lack of quality. And I hate to say it because a lot of these artists are our friends, but I'm going to just point it to that.
No, say what needs to be said.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. I'm going to hit y'all with one more question. I know our time is running short, so yeah. And I really want to get Kevin's perspective on this one. So question number two, there's an argument from younger fans who believe that the 90s and 2000s nostalgia that we see is overrated and younger artists are held to unfair standards. Kev, do you believe that's true? And if so, how do we reconcile that?
Do I believe that the 90s and 2000s sound is overrated?
Or it's overrated, and younger artists are held to unfair standards because of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Be real on them.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely be real for sure. I believe that the 90s and 2000s were a good time for music, but I do believe that it's overrated. I truly do, because I mean, you're talking to somebody that, even though I didn't grow up in this era, and I'm like 20 plus years removed from that, from the 70s.
Yeah.
I'm a 90s baby, but my parents were 70s lovers. So all of the Bad Boy days and all of the flips and all that stuff, I was like, oh damn, my parents played the original in the house. So it made me have a deeper affinity for that era of music, right? So then when we get to the 90s and 2000s, and then we get older, and everybody just kind of, it's kind of a rinse and repeat. And everybody's looking for the next Aaliyah. Everybody looking for the next this, and everybody looking for the next that. And these younger artists, it is unfair because of the fact that when Aaliyah was coming out, wasn't nobody looking for that? Who was before Aaliyah?
Yeah.
Right. Who was right? But we weren't saying she the next Janet, right? Yeah. Like when Aaliyah came on the scene, it was just like, okay, who's this new girl? We were trying to like fully scope it out, yeah. You know. But granted, the demographic for R&B was different. R&B was pop.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They were putting pop money into R&B. So that's why we're stuck. That's why we're stuck in this world where we can't get over the 90s, right? Because the 90s was the highlight of the genre where they spent the most money in the 90s and the early 2000s. So going back to marketing and promotion, when the marketing promotion was shoving millions of dollars into it, this is what we remember. This is what to say it didn't get any better, but it's like not better. The true word is it wasn't as exposed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, it didn't get any bigger than that time. So yeah, everybody's going to be held to the standards of saying, you know, who's going to be the next, you know, Donnell Jones, who's going to be this, who's going to make me feel like where I want to be, who's going to make me feel like, you know, this and that. I think it's unfair. And I really do think that people need to just kind of be quiet and let artists find their way. You know what I mean? Like if it wasn't for, you know, let's say even when Beyonce stepped on the scene.
Yeah.
And I remember, people may not want to remember, but there was people alongside Beyonce. And I talk about the group. I'm talking about competitiveness.
Yeah.
You had Beyonce that came out. You had A-Marie that came out. And let's not pretend like when A-Marie dropped those first two albums, like she wasn't a problem. Yeah. She was a problem with Rich Harrison. That One Thing record.
Absolutely. Like, wow.
Crazy. Yep.
Yeah. She was a problem. Here's the thing. See, we couldn't put a point on Beyonce. Everybody was like, she's Tina Turner. She's Diana Ross. No, she's Beyonce.
Yeah.
But we've never seen anything like that. We never seen somebody that could sing as well, that could dance as well, that looked as good as her, that was voluptuous as her, that had that energy, who was business minded. You know what I'm saying? Like it took years in order for her and in order for the world to be like, you know what, she's just Beyonce. And it's like, yeah, that's what she's been trying to say this whole goddamn time, right?
Yeah.
But who's gonna stick it out, right? Who has the endurance as an artist to stick it out?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And to not listen to what people gotta say. Your intention should not be trying to do Aaliyah. Mm-hmm. Your intention should not be trying to do anything else. Because the more that you do that, the more that you become a target. So if you do something that's Aaliyah-esque, if you look like Aaliyah, or you're trying to dress like it, if you're trying to pay homage, you're putting yourself into a gauntlet that you don't want to be in. You don't want to do it. So at the end of the day, don't set yourself up in that way where people are going to have to compare you. It's always going to be comparisons. Like that's just how people's minds formulate to allow for things to make sense. But at the end of the day, as much as it is unfair, my advice to younger artists is stay your path.
Yeah.
You got to know your end goal. And you got to know that your end goal may not come, or you may not reach your your promise until maybe 10 years, mm-hmm. 20 years.
Yeah.
It just depends on your race and your marathon, right? How long are you willing to wait? You know what I mean? But I to answer your question, yes, I do think the 90s and 2000s were overrated because of the fact that they were over budget. Yep. And they spent billions of dollars. And I think that it is unfair for younger artists to be compared to that time. But at the end of the day, the job is for younger artists is to stay their path. You know what I mean? Like, so there's that.
Well, Ed, I will say this. So do I think the 90s and 2000s were overrated? Yeah, there were a lot of bad songs that came out during that era that when we look back at, it's just like nostalgia and we love it today. But there are a couple of things that I hope to see mm-hmm. from this new generation that I don't think it's even a 90s or 2000s thing. I think it's just like a foundational skill. But being able to write songs that have changes, to write bridges, to have chord changes, like these are things that should not go away, you know, no matter what the year is. Like, and I see that now being a musician, being able to play an instrument, it's not looked at as cool. Whereas in years past, it has always been looked at as cool. And that's why when we first met Kevin at the Essence Festival, I remember your first time on stage, you were playing the keys and I was so mind blown away by that because not everyone can do that. And that needs to be celebrated more. But the other thing I'll say with this new generation is, because I'm trying to think of an artist in their 20s that really celebrates the greats. Like Her does it, but the other person that really does it is Jacquees. Like he's the only one that I can think of that actually celebrates our 90s greats. So I need to see more of that. And if we see a little more respect for that music, I think that that era will respect this generation more.
I agree. And that's actually something that we get to later in that piece too. So if you want to see more of that conversation, just go to soulstereo.com. Just sitting up at the top of the page is Modern R&B, A Victim of Ageism, roundtable discussion. Good combo just like this.
Nice, nice. So I'm going to go into this segment here, Kevin. So Ed, on a weekly basis, does this thing called Love Letters, where people mm-hmm. submit questions to him about relationship advice. And what we also do is we take lyrics from songs and we try to just pinpoint where did they go wrong or did they do the right thing. And Ed, I'm going to hit you with this one today. This is a record that Kevin Ross wrote. Trey Songz, What's Best for You.
Okay.
This sounds like a very gentleman approach because, Ed, we also talk about Donnell Jones, Where I Want to Be, which we think that is like a horrible approach. Did Kevin get it right with this Trey record? Is that what we're supposed to be doing?
Listen, player, I feel like, and look, we've talked about it before. I love the Donnell record. Yes. I'm sure everybody up here loves the Donnell record. Yep. If you try to present the message that Donnell did to the poor woman on that thing, hands will be on your face because ain't no girl gonna go down for that. But this, I feel like, I'm not just saying that because Heaven is here. I've been saying this for years. This is how you should get around that because Trey/Kevin is saying, look, it doesn't matter how bad it feels, how much it hurts, you deserve your worth. He's admitting that he messed up and they're like, you probably would be better off trying to like go elsewhere because this that we got ain't gonna be healthy for both of us. But what I've always wanted to know from you, Kevin, because the video kind of confuses me, so maybe you can speak to this. is Trey like playing with two girls or is he seeing this one girl and his mind is to this other person and he just doesn't know what to do? Or is he just playing games on two chicks? Let a brother know.
I'm going to be honest. I never knew there was a video. I've never seen it.
Yes, there's a video.
Never seen it. That's good to know. Now, I will say this. In defense of Where I Want to Be, consider it a perspective difference.
Sure.
What's best for you is talking directly to the woman. Mm. Where I Want to Be is talking to himself in the mirror, right? Yeah. In the video, because when I think about it like this, when I think of Donnell Jones, even though his video was with a girl, because it would have been crazy with him like looking in the mirror, but think about it like this. I should have left my baby girl a message, said I wouldn't be coming home, I'd rather be alone. She doesn't fully understand me, that I'd rather leave than to cheat. So if I give it some time, I'll be a man she needs. I got the lust inside of me, blah, 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 right? He doesn't really point to her until he says, I don't mean to hurt you. I didn't mean to hurt you, right? So first and foremost, perspective issue, right? But all I have to say is that's more of a song of a man looking in the mirror and practicing to say, okay, what am I going to say to her? You left someone, you don't treat her bad. No, I don't like that. No, this is not where I want to be right now. I don't mean to hurt you. Okay, that's better. He's practicing what he's going to say and how it's going to come out. It's just the fact that it wasn't presented in that way in the song where he didn't say, I'm looking at myself in the mirror, or I'm thinking to myself, or I'm saying to myself. It came off as if he's talking to her, but more so when you look at the verse and you hear those she's, that is indirect. So when we really got to ask the question, who is he talking to, right? Mm-hmm. And the best answer that I could give is himself.
Yeah,
he's literally practicing. And that's the difference between what's best for you and where I want to be is, I mean, obviously where I want to be is a classic, but all I have to say, what's best for you is more direct. Don't make this hard for me. It's not about who's right or wrong. If it's how it's really supposed to be, then I love will carry on. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're literally, you can hear within the lyrics how we are teetering to say, it doesn't mean I'm giving up, but just know, I only want the best for you.
Wow.
Because like you said, you got to walk out that room alive. You got to walk out that room alive. You know what I mean? Talking to a woman like that. So that's why we were saying, doesn't mean I'm giving up. Don't make this hard. I want the best for you. It's not about what I want, but it's all about what you need. And I want the best for you. And then he slightly fade off into the distance.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? and you leave her with that, and she's kind of stunned because you're like, oh my gosh, she's so thoughtful, but I'm alone.
I have never seen such an impressive breakdown of where I want to be. You need to be Donnell's publicist because you cleaned up some stuff. I still think he's shady, but you made a good point for it.
Kev, next week we might have to go through Jagged Edge's Let's Get Married. We ain't no younger.
Oh,
we might as well do it. I see this stuff on Twitter all the time. It's hilarious.
No. You got your work cut out, Kevin. You ain't defending this one. Let me go tell my wife we might as well do this.
My lips are sealed on that one, for sure.
Yeah, I thought so.
Shout outs to Jagged Edge. Kevin, just a couple more questions before we're out of here. We like to ask this to all of our guests, because Ed and I debate about this all the time. When it comes to chicken wings, what's better, drumettes or flats?
I don't have a preference, man. I'm gonna get it all. Drumettes or them flats, it don't matter. I'm at it.
Chicken is chicken.
I'm at my own heart.
Chicken is chicken.
Chicken is chicken. All right, Kevin. Bring us up to date with what you're working on, what's coming out. Of course, you got the new single, Looking for Love. I think Drive 2 is coming out soon.
Drive 2 is coming. Yeah, man. Yep. I'm really looking forward to this project. I think that, you know, people love Drive, you know, for the small, like, core people who have listened to it and that have experienced it.
Yeah.
Will really, truly enjoy Drive 2. I think that this time around, you know, we're bringing more people along for the ride as well.
Yeah.
So that's an exciting thing. I think that, you know, this is the most that I produced on an album thus far. You know, I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of, like, you know, when you guys hear the first five songs, like, you'll know what's up. Like, you'll know what's up. As soon as, like, you press play, you'll know, like, why I called it Drive 2. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, like, just the order and the flow of it, you'd be like, there is no other title for this record.
Yeah.
But to call it Drive 2 in the sense of just the fluidity of it, the content that's on it, my approach to it, unlike Audacity, where Audacity was just a big experiment like, you know, just like with all this stuff, like now at my disposal to say, you know what, I wanted to do so many things as a major and now I'm independent. I can do anything I want to do.
Yeah.
And you heard that. You heard, you know, you heard me trying to now piece together so many different personalities and traits and colors and different themes that it was just a huge experiment, right? Drive 2 is a lot more focused in the sense that sonically where I'm going with, you know what I mean? Like with this project, I never like to say like, this is where I'm at musically in the sense of, it's tough for me because of the fact that like, I feel like in music, I have the choice to do whatever I want to do.
Right.
But the thing is about making the right decisions. Just because you could do what you want to do doesn't mean that it's best.
Right.
So I had to check the room and check the temperature to say, how can I best influence or implement energy into the genre and still be true to myself? And Drive 2 is definitely a representation of that. And I think people are going to like it. People are going to like it, and be on the lookout for that in October.
Nice.
So, you know, you'll be riding in your car. It's going to be a little brisk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Throw that on. You know what I'm saying? As you ride it, wherever that you're going. Hopefully we are not back inside in October. You are, it's still some great, like, it's soothing. I call it this. It's all purpose music.
Mm.
All purpose music.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I say, because I believe, and this is just me, I believe that Looking for Love is an all-purpose song. You can wake up and play Looking for Love. You can go to sleep and play Looking for Love. You can ride around with Looking for Love. You can do whatever you want with that song, and it won't disturb a groove. There's certain songs that people will make where you just like, I'm just not in the not in the mood for that. I'm not in the, you know, it's too, you know, right. Too upbeat for me to be playing this shit before I go to sleep. You know what I'm saying? Love it. But I'm not gonna, you know, so I think that this project is an all-purpose project. So, you know, I think that's the beauty of it, is just, you know, I'm in the process of developing catalog. And I have an end goal that, you know, in the next 5 years, it'll all make sense.
Wow. Nice. So I can't wait for that, because I really loved Drive 1, the first one that came out, because it was a little different than The Awakening. It was like a little more smooth, a little cooler than The Awakening. Yes. But
Less cooks in the kitchen with Drive 2. It was just me and Jay Kitt. So
Nice. So Ed, that's all for me. Anything that you want to add?
No, like I said, gotta thank my boy Kevin for coming through. Love the insight, love the business acumen, love the passion for R&B. Love that he agreed with me on some stuff. So if you're mad at me, you're mad at Kevin. Don't be hitting me with the tweets. Hit both of us with the tweets. Always good to have. And he is welcome in it. He wants to come back through. We got to have my boy back.
Absolutely. So Kevin, appreciate you for taking the time out for this. You know, we just did an interview with you like 3 days ago, but we had to bring you back just because of your knowledge, because of your passion for R&B. And I mean, we got to do it again soon.
Oh, yeah, man. My guys, man, I appreciate y'all.